Okay, we're recording.
Thank you. Okay, it is 6 p.m. on October 27th, 2021. This is a city council meeting, and my name is Julia Johnson, and Mayor Sijawuli, and I will call this meeting to order. Will all of you please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance with me?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. Hey, Glenn. Okay, I will move on to roll call, and I'll start with Council at Large, Kevin Loy.
Present.
Ward 1 Council Member Brendan McGoffin.
Present.
Councilwoman Joellen Kesty.
Present.
Councilwoman Sarah Diamond.
Present.
Councilman Glenn Allen.
Present.
Councilman Chuck Owen.
Present.
And Councilman Carl DeYoung.
I am here.
Right. Thank you, council members. We are going to move on to the approval of the agenda, but before we do, we realized today that on the unfinished business, which is the second reading of the franchise renewal for Comcast, that it requires a public hearing. And we haven't had that scheduled, so we do need to pull that item for tonight. So in looking for an approval of the agenda, that would include pulling the Comcast franchise on the unfinished business. Do I have a motion?
Madam Mayor, I make a motion to approve the agenda with pulling the Comcast franchise.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
I'll second.
Thank you. I have a motion by Councilman McGoffin, seconded by Councilwoman Kesty. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Same sign. Motion carries. Moving on to the consent agenda, items 1 through 6. Do I have a motion?
Madam Mayor, I make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Madam Mayor, I'll second that.
Thank you. So we have a motion by Councilwoman Kesty, seconded by Councilwoman Diamond to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. My apologies. Opposed, same sign. Okay. We have tonight, first of all, let me just read this. So we have a big thanks to Teresa Nesheim, who's going to be retiring the end of October. In fact, this is her last week. And we really want to thank her for her dedication and service to the city. And tomorrow we're going to have a little luncheon on her, and we're going to celebrate her and her time here at the city. And we also want to thank John Warline, which I'm asking he comes forward right now if he would, please. And also we want to thank Tamara Blunt, who received her 30-year dedication award earlier this week. So thank you, John.
Working here, and it's been a great place to work, and
A lot of changes going on now. There's been a lot of changes over the last 30 years. You don't really think about it until you sit down and really look through your mind. But it's been a great place to work, and thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Thank you for your dedication.
Director Freiberger, did you want to say anything? Okay. All right. It's wonderful. Thank you very much. I do have a box here, John, if you want to take it home in a box, or it's here, if you want it. Okay, moving on to staff reports, and I will begin with, let's see who's on tonight. Is it Assistant Fire Chief Glenn Gardner? No, it's Jerry. Hi, Jerry. It's our Assistant Chief, Jerry Gardner. Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah. Thanks for having me in the night and council. Quick couple updates. So COVID updates right now, our current cases per 100,000. We're at 560, down about 25 per 100,000 over the last week. Our hospitalization rates, it is about an 11.5. That's about two less for the last week. And then new cases, we had about 441 cases this week, down from the average 450, 451 over the last 7 days prior to that. So just giving you kind of that snapshot of where we are with that. In the last week, we've had the vaccine mandate pass through that date. We did lose three volunteer firefighters in that from the Volunteer Fire Association. One of those was a resident firefighter. But a note for that is the association voted to give all of those individuals a one-year leave of absence. So they have some leeway if things change or personally or on the mandate end, they could come back into the association pretty seamlessly. So staffing continues to be a struggle for us to fill our shifts right now. We're currently have six of our 13 resident positions between the two stations filled. We just did an onboarding for a seventh today, so that was exciting for us. And she'll start the move-in process over the next week, and we'll start getting her on shadow shifts and up to speed as soon as possible. We're recruiting for continuous hiring needs, trying to be as creative as we can and figure out how we can get more people into the department. But we're competing with a number of departments in the region, and they're all having the same issues and concerns as we talk with them. So this is an ongoing issue for fire and EMS in the near future. And then last, our new ambulance is in service, and we're getting some great feedback from our crews with all of that. So that's been awesome, and that's been a breath of fresh air. We are having some mechanical issues with our other two ambulances the past few weeks, and so we're trying to keep them afloat until next year's scheduled replacements are ordered and ready to arrive. But a note on that is current turnaround time on those ambulances is after they're ordered is almost 300 days. From agreement due to supply and demand on the chassis side. So that's what I have for my report this evening.
All right. Thank you, Chief. Police Chief Lynn Tucker.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Three things. First off, we had an alert earlier this week from the Sheriff's Office. They've been monitoring a potential high water event occurring by the end of this week and early into the weekend. It didn't look like we were going to get too inundated, but looks like there's a chance for some lowland flooding due to some serious rain going on upriver. So keep that in mind if you're out and about. The second thing is one of the things that we've noticed since we've had a lot of these legislative mandates come out that were enacted and went into effect on July 25th is a numerous uptick in stolen vehicles. These aren't high-end stolen vehicles. These are our beater vehicles that are running around. And the boys are out with one right now that they recovered at the Skagit Motel. And there for a while, we were having somebody run from us in stolen vehicles pretty much every night. We did not have the ability to chase them and probably wouldn't have done that anyway, even prior to some of these legislative mandates. So, but all the agencies locally are running into the same thing. There's a lot of weird little thefts like that and stolen cars going on. We're going to be monitoring that and seeing where that goes. I'm thinking that we've got just a group that are out, as Aaron Berg always said, a bunch of ne'er-do-wells out running around committing their crimes. So we're keeping an eye on that. And the last and most important thing is one of the prettiest baby girls was born last week. My granddaughter, Holly Houston Konkin, was born on the mayor's birthday last Wednesday night. No complications. And she is home with her mom and daddy and big brother. I got the advantage of caring for a three-year-old for 3 days straight. So any of you that haven't had little people in your house for a while, this is why I had kids when I was little. Chasing a three-year-old now is a little bit tougher. But that's all I've got, Mayor. Things are going good in our department, and we're doing real fine. We're looking forward to meeting Charlie next week. And talking about some of the things that we've been bringing up to the mayor and Doug and kind of trying to get a seamless transition. So thank you all. And I'm here to the end of the meeting if you have any questions.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for the chief? Okay. If not, we will move on. Director of Building and Permits, John Coleman.
Good evening, Council, Mayor. Well, I've got an agenda item for you in a little while, so I'll keep this brief. The big thing we're still working on right now is trying to find a replacement for our building inspector plans examiner position. We have been in contact with a couple of people and trying to figure this out. It's been harder than one would normally expect. It's a tough position to fill because it's got highly specialized skill set that's required. But as you're seeing in other departments throughout the city, there's also a lot of other things going on in the job market that are making it tough to find employees. So we're in that same boat, but we're working on it and hopefully getting close to the end here. And I'll speak with you again in a few moments when my agenda item's back up. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, John. Director of Public Works, Mark Freiberger.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council and guests. Main thing to report tonight is Faber Construction has mobilized and has started the demolition work and site prep for the new Public Works and wastewater treatment plant buildings. That project's going well so far. We received a schedule from them today, and we'll be reviewing that. And beyond that, the Northern States fence project is essentially complete. We were still waiting on a gate. Nathan hadn't been up there to see if they put it in today, but that's nearly done. And quite an improvement to the site up there, the little parking area now, and the gate will allow us to lock that and get some additional control to keep the unintended actions from happening up there in the dark. Fire station 2.5 or 7.5, I think Nathan's calling it. The framing is complete on that, and we're just waiting on the metals package to get the roof and insulation in and finish that up for the fire department. And our re-roofing and re-siding project down at the existing Public Works building is done other than the gutters, so that's just in time with the rain we've been getting. And on Friday, the startup took place for our State Street pump station upgrade, and that's complete, and everything's running well with that. So other than that, we just have our various other design things going on, and as with John's department, we're looking for a couple of personnel, both a wastewater operator and a senior engineer, and we've advertised those and had no applications come in yet, so we've widened the net a little bit using LinkedIn and some other sources that we have to see if we can bring some things in on that. So We'll be having a work session on November 3rd to talk about our utility rate adjustments, and so we're preparing for that. And then on November 24th, we'll bring the transportation improvement or the transportation impact fee fund adjustment to you as well. So those will be coming up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Director of Finance, Debbie Burton.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. We are looking forward to celebrating Teresa tomorrow as she goes about her retirement. Very appreciative for all the wonderful things that she has done for the city. And all our new staff is running full staff, so I'm very excited about that as well. And so I'll also talk to you this evening on my topic.
All right. Thank you, Debbie. Director of IT, Bill Chambers.
We're fully staffed, so catching up on a lot of items. Still working on network switch firmware updates and network inventory and new network diagrams. The WIMS software for the wastewater treatment plant, they're undergoing training this week, and I am working on the renewing the our Microsoft Enterprise agreement for next year. And most of you probably know that the city web server was down or very sluggish for most of the day last Tuesday. That corresponded with Planning Commission meeting that night. So some folks were not able to get the link to that meeting. And we got some feedback from that. The message, the information that I had been posting on Facebook was simply a link to our website. So when the website was down, that really didn't help. That on Facebook links didn't help. So now I'm publishing those links on Facebook, as well as the links for the council meetings. So that folks will definitely have the Zoom connection info. And that's about it for me.
All right. Thank you, Bill. City Attorney, Nikki Thompson.
I apologize in advance for my dogs barking in the background. A couple of quick things. We are almost finished with the franchise negotiations with PSE. They are taking one thing back to their team to address. That should be in front of you within the next couple of meetings. I don't think that it's going to take long. You'll also see a rewrite of Title IX coming forward soon, again within the next few meetings, which is very exciting for me. I've also been doing some work on some amendments in Title II. So, again, those will be before you within the next few meetings. Beyond that, I don't have anything of interest to the group.
All right. Thank you, Nikki. So, you know, Nikki, I have to say, so the directors and the people who work here, they do put a lot of enthusiasm and energy into their work. But I've never seen anybody quite like you who really enjoys what she does. Lots of joy in what you do. It's cool
to
see.
I enjoy it.
And our city administrator, Dr. Doug Merriman.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. Nikki just mentioned a couple of code amendments we have coming up. When you see the agenda for November 10th, there's going to be a pretty good list on there. So don't be shocked. A lot of it's some of it's housekeeping. Some is just taking a new direction with some of the areas in our operations. One of those is our court and legal area. So we have a couple different ordinances coming your way. As you may recall, a few weeks ago, we adopted public defense standards that kind of raises the bar as far as what we provide as a service to our defendants. We're now following on with an ordinance to add some enhancement to our prosecution. And also, you heard Nikki talk about Title IX. And what Title IX is in our city code, it's our criminal code that lists out different violations of criminal code. Sue DeWooley has pretty much developed their own over the years, but we don't exactly reference the RCWs, which is the state law that drives most of those. So there are times your own city codes can get out of sync with state codes as those get adjusted over time. So Nikki and I, primarily Nikki, has been working on the Title IX amendment there, where what we're going to do is repeal our own city codes and replace those with references to the RCW. So in here, Title IX, that doesn't say much there, but that's a pretty big step for us, and that'll really help our police department sync up with charging of things they do. And also, when we take things to court, we don't run the risk of referencing the wrong area, whether it's our city code or the RCWs. We'll talk about more of that. I believe that's on the agenda for November 10th. So exciting things coming down the pipeline. One other thing we have is the salary commission. We have the ordinance and the code amendment put together for that. Council had requested that this last month. That is scheduled for November 10th for your review and adoption. So we have that pretty much wrapped up. Starting next week, Charlie Bush, my replacement, will be on site, and we'll start our 1 month of overlap working on projects together. We're looking at it as really handing off the baton. Charlie and I have already been talking over the last couple of weeks, but we really want staff to have a real smooth transition so there's not confusion on, do I talk to Doug? Do I talk to Charlie? So we're really wanting to make that really good for the organization, and I think we've got a good handle on that. The last piece that I have is Mark talked about the Public Works Operations Building. We did go out for financing. We used the State Treasurer's Office. They have a program called the Local Program where a number of cities can pool their bonding needs if they need to issue municipal bonds. And that way you're only paying those issue costs once, and you just share those between the cities. So it's a less expensive way of issuing bonds. We did go out to the market yesterday. The State Treasurer's Office did. A year and a half ago, I think we projected, interest rates being where they were at the time, that we would hope to get about a 3.8% interest rate. When we closed yesterday, we ended up with a 2.41% interest rate. So we were really happy with that. That will go into our bond ordinance and everything, and we officially closed the financing package in November. But we do know that rate's locked in, so we're really happy with that. That's a good rate for this project. And that's all I have for tonight.
Right, it's all good stuff. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And we will move on to council reports, and I'll begin with Mr. DeYoung, Councilman DeYoung.
Thank you. So in Ward 6, as Chief Tucker brought up, we might get a little lowland flooding coming up, and it's good to hear that folks are getting prepared for that. We notice less traffic on the river as the river has gone up, so that's be safe out there. And we heard a report about COVID. Thank you, Assistant Chief. Did we talk about the two deaths over the past week, too? That was in the report that I saw from the county. Besides that, be safe out there during the next atmospheric river event. And let's get those storm drains cleared to prevent a little bit of flooding. And that's what I have from Ward 6. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Councilman Owen.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't have anything tonight.
All right. Thank you. Councilman Allen.
Thank you, Mayor Julia. Okay. Mayor Johnson, I did have, and I'm not pushing this on anyone, I had my booster shot yesterday. I'm not going to force it on anybody else, but I'm glad I did it. And now I'm going to ask you guys for an excuse for next month. I'm taking off to Mexico on Saturday for 3 weeks. I'm going to take down my little iPad and see if I have Wi-Fi good enough. But if not, we'll see you the 24th. And I do not want a property tax increase. Okay. Thank you, Madam.
So, Councilman Allen, would you like us to make that motion, somebody to make that motion to excuse you while you are on vacation this month?
What's the motion?
Madam Mayor.
Councilman, yes, Councilman DeYoung?
I move to excuse Councilmember Allen from next 3 weeks.
All right. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
All right. So we have a motion by Councilman DeYoung, seconded by Councilwoman Diamond. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, same sign. So good deal. Have a great time.
I will.
Yeah. All right. Councilwoman Diamond.
I don't have a whole lot tonight. I do have to report that I had a couple conversations with constituents a little bit concerned about the traffic coming through and how some of these new developments are going to impact the additional traffic that's going to come with that. Specifically coming through Highway 9 and Township, that stoplight, the backup that comes with it. So coming from both directions there. Cook Road, in fact, somebody told me that they live here and take Cook Road every day, and it took them, more than 10 minutes sitting at the end of Cook Road just to get out to get onto the freeway. And with all of the developments and the people coming in, how is that going to affect getting in and out of town? So, you know, these are things that are being brought up. The other one is Highway 20 specifically, Ferry, Puget, getting across Highway 20 just to simply go over to North Reed even. So I took it upon myself to try that out myself and found that every time I tried to cross the road from Ferry to North Reed, it took me on average 7 to 10 minutes sometimes during certain traffic hours. So that's a fairly long time to sit there to try to cross the road, literally to get right across the way there. So just bringing that to the attention, it's brought to me, bringing it forth. And then the other thing is the community is starting to get really excited about the holidays. We know that there are COVID restrictions and everybody's doing, what they believe to be done to be safe. But most importantly, and the thing most people are excited about is the town Christmas tree, because it is not just a tree to this town. It brings people together. It brings people hope. It brings people a sense of peace as they're walking through town, whether it's early in the morning, late at night, just seeing it lit up. The fact that it's been up for over 100 years, and just to see that tradition come through, especially in a time when people are feeling down and really struggling with what's going on, with the restrictions of COVID and life right now. And so I think that that's really just something exciting and wonderful that we can provide the community and continue with.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you. And, just for the record, I do believe it's going up November 24th.
Yes,
the Christmas tree will be. And I didn't know, you're talking about the traffic, and I do know that that is something that our Public Works Director, Mark Freiberger, has been working on and is working on.
Wonderful.
And I don't know, Mark, if you wanted to talk a little bit about that in just a few minutes now so that Sarah can take that back to her constituents.
Thank you. I think it's a good segue. We have engaged Transportation Solutions Incorporated, who's our on-call traffic modeling outfit, to take a look at the traffic, especially in light of the new developments that we know are happening or planned in the next couple of years. The model that we have was done in 2016 and updated a couple of years ago, and we just do that every now and again to make sure that our assumptions are correct. And so we'll have a better feel for the impacts on the intersections in particular, which are the biggest bottlenecks we have. And speaking of a few of those in particular, the SR20, SR9 Township intersection, as you know, we are out to bid right now for a contract to upgrade that and add dedicated turn lanes on that, on the legs that don't have that now. And it should help some for that intersection. I'm not saying that we'll solve it, but it will be somewhat better than it is now. That project is out to bid, closes on November the 4th, and if the bids come in well, we'll have that to you for possible award on November the 10th and get that contract cut. The COVID-19 supply chain issues that we're hearing about are affecting signal equipment big time. There was only two factories in the United States that make the poles, and both of them shut down for a couple of months early in COVID, and they've never caught up. And so the lead time on that equipment is about 10 months now. I just heard that at our pre-bid meeting a couple of days ago. We had heard it was 6. Now they're saying 10. So it's possible that we'll get that project awarded and start the process of buying those poles and still be looking at 2023 before that project, or 2023 before that project can get built. We're going to keep pushing and trying to do it in 2022 because of the traffic, which you mentioned. We'll also be hearing on November 19th on our TIB application for the signal improvements at SR9 and John Liner and McGarrogle, which is another focus intersection we have. Beyond that, we're also taking a very close look at the Cook Trail intersection. A lot of the new development that's going on, the RJ Group five-story building, BYK has another one there on Stendhal that will be happening that's 68 units or thereabouts, and there's several others in the immediate vicinity that are under construction or planned. And so we're going to take a really close look at that intersection. It's still operating at an acceptable level of service, according to the numbers, but there'll come a point where that's going to rise to the top of the heap in terms of doing some improvements. And we've been talking some about the Jones-John Liner Trail Corridor Project, and one of the improvements planned for that is a roundabout intersection at Cook and Trail. And we've acquired a piece of the right-of-way for that with the development of the new filling station that's going at the south east corner of that intersection. And we're also negotiating with the school district for what we need on the north side. So that project is actually already moving ahead in the preliminary stages from that aspect. So I'll be reporting on that as I bring get the results digested on that traffic impact analysis update. I'll be giving you the information that I find on that. But yes, we're very aware of the challenges that Highway 20 are bringing. What you're seeing at our intersections is what they experience every day at like Skagit Street and the other intersections, Peacock in Burlington. It's just the same thing. You basically can't make a left turn at many of those intersections. We have the advantage of having a center turn lane all the way through town, but even with that, it's challenging. One of the transportation plan projects is actually to convert a couple of the intersections into right in, right out. And that's just recognizing the fact that you can't make a left turn on them safely during many hours of the day now. And so that's going to happen. They're low enough volume that they really don't warrant looking at a signal. So that's the next best thing, is to just take away that potential conflict from those left turns. So that's kind of what's on our mind with that. And we do look at that quite a bit, and I'll continue to report on that as it develops. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Was that helpful? Good. Okay. All right. Moving on to Absolutely. Go ahead, Councilman Allen.
It seems like growth is driving all these problems. Do we need to relook about different impact fees or increased instead of property taxes?
So I'm glad you brought that up. The presentation you'll hear at the November 3rd meeting, we'll touch on that in terms of the impact fees for sewer. And we'll also talk about that on November 24th with the transportation impact fees. Now, and what you will hear from me mostly is an expansion of a short word on that right now, and that is the plans that we have in place anticipate the growth that we're seeing. They anticipate the growth in terms of the sewer utility over 10 years and the impacts on the plant, and the other things related to that, and 20 years for transportation. So for instance, on the transportation impact fee setup, we've built in a system to where the development projects are paying the development requirements share of that. Basically, what they will do is those funds will provide matching dollars for these grants that you hear me talking about so often, like the TIB grant that's outstanding right now. That's That's how we fund those. It's just simply not feasible for us to build most of those projects on our own. So we pursue grant funding, and we've been pretty successful with that. So having the impact fees available to have the match money for that is really critical. And so, yes, we do think that the fees are system with the increases that we built into it will allow us to manage the growth as best we can on the routes in town.
Okay. We also have Mr. Coleman. Would you like to make a comment? Your hand is up.
Since you brought up impact fees, yes, we actually are looking at impact fees in several different areas. So I'm sort of bringing it up. It seems like a good time to talk about it. We're already, Public Works Department and Planning are working on park impact fees updates. We're doing a survey, and as soon as we have a little bit of time to spend on this, we intend to bring that to the City Council to talk about possibly, if the council is interested, raising park impact fees to help pay for new parks developments. The thing about impact fees, as we've talked about before, is it can only be used to deal with, it's not allowed to be used for deficits, it's, you know, existing problems, but it can be used to create new infrastructure reasonably necessary because of new development. So, you know, building new parks, developing existing parks land to provide more services is possible with impact fees. Not only is, sort of coincidentally, the school district, we just got word on Monday that they are updating their capital facilities plan, and they're looking at increasing school impact fees also. And they'll be making a decision. Their council, their board will be reviewing that. And I'm looking at my notes here. I don't think I have that written down in the next month or so. And then after they make a vote on their capital facilities plan, then we might be able to increase the school impact fees. The school impact fees are set by the school district capital facility plan. They have an analysis, and they're saying exactly how much growth they're expecting and how much they're going to need to increase their capital, their school impact fees to pay for those new capital facilities. Currently, a new single family residence pays $1,678 for school impact fees. So every new single family home pays that. For multi-unit buildings such as duplexes and apartments, it pays $847. They're looking at increasing those numbers quite significantly, which depending on how you look at it, is either very good because it allows the school to have more money to pay for new capital facilities, such as schools, school buildings, or if you're looking at it from the development side, you could see it as a negative because developers will have to pay more and it will cost people more for housing. But, you know, everybody tries to strike a balance, and I'm well aware of the need for school facilities, so this might be a good development. The proposed single family rate will be $4,461, so that's $2,785 more than what they currently pay. Which, as a reminder, the current single family rate is $1,678. The multifamily rate would go up to $2,888, which is about $850 more than, or I'm sorry, it's a little bit more than that. They currently pay about $850, so about a little over $2,000 more per unit. So that actually might go pretty far towards helping the school district pay for their capital facilities needs. The way school impact fees work is they're set by the school district. And then the city more or less adopts them. We do not keep the money. We collect it on behalf of the school district, and then it is directed through our finance department to the school district for their use of capital facilities. So that's three impact fee prices that may or may not be changing over the next several months. So since you asked, there's the long answer. Hope that clarifies things.
Thank you, John. Okay, moving on to Councilwoman Kesty.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to start out by wishing Teresa a happy retirement. Thank you for your many years of service. I'd also like to acknowledge the sacrifice many men and women made due to Governor Inslee's vaccine mandate, especially our city firefighters that were affected by this. Thank you for all you have done for our community. And lastly, the stormy weather has brought lots of leaves and debris in the curbs. I've spoken with Nathan, and the street sweeper is down again. So my question is for Mark. Is there any way to look at or into a new street sweeper or something that can be more reliable?
Yes, we've had those discussions locally here a couple of times. We have this street sweeper on replacement plan for 2025, I believe it is. It's a relatively new machine. It has been a high maintenance item for us. I think we got a bit of a lemon. And so it's back in the shop now for a wiring harness problem that we just paid about $8,000 to fix earlier this year. It was down for about a month with that. So we've looked at the possibility of accelerating a purchase. Frankly, a lot of that equipment is close to a year out to get it now. So even if we decided to do it, it would be quite a while before we would have another unit. But it's time to look pretty carefully at that. The annual repair costs on it are actually, even with the issues we've had, still in tune with what you would see on a piece of equipment like that. From strictly a cost of service analysis, it really is not time to replace it yet. But it is a functionality issue that we have to address, and we're looking at that. I asked Nathan this afternoon, kind of thinking that question might come up, about the possibility of a rental. We haven't chosen to do that, but with the leaves we have right now, it's pretty important we get that on track. So if we can't get a good answer from the repair shop, we'll be looking into rent a unit to get our streets back under control with the leaves.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Moving on to Councilman McGoffin.
Hi, thank you. I'd also just like to congratulate Teresa on her retirement and also thank John and Tamara for their 30 years of service. And lastly, just a reminder, if you're a registered voter, the ballots are out. So just a reminder to make sure you vote, and best of luck to everyone that's running. Thanks.
All right, thank you. And Councilman Loy.
I have nothing tonight, Mayor.
All right. Thank you. I have a few things. First off, I, too, want to extend a huge thanks to Teresa and to John and to Tamara. They have really been wonderful employees and good examples for all of us to learn from and live by. So thank you for your time and your dedication to our city and to the citizens of the city. There's been a lot of talk about COVID, and I know that people grow weary of it. But we did have a release that came out from Skagit County Health Officer Dr. Howard Librand, and I'm going to read just a few things to you because it has to do with our holiday. So our holiday's coming up. So just a reminder that the COVID case rate is increasing once again. And though cases may be declining in other parts of the states, we're not seeing a sustained decrease here in Skagit County, which is concerning. Local data shows that we have an average of 59 new test positive cases per day reported to the health department over the past 14 days, and that's from October 8th to October 21st. So whether you are vaccinated or unvaccinated, please continue to use discretion. Use extra precaution when gathering indoors and in poorly ventilated areas. Wear your masks. And when gathering with people who are higher risk, please be considerate of their health. Last, no one experiencing COVID-19 symptoms should be attending any group events or going to work or doing in-person school. People with symptoms need to stay home until they can be tested and recover from the symptoms. I know this is a repeat, but I think it's just imperative that we do repeat it. If we do not practice these measures, whether you are vaccinated or unvaccinated, it will lead to the spread of the disease and possible long-term illness, death, and disruption in our daily lives. So in order for us to have a wonderful holiday season and to kind of help turn some of this pandemic around, if everybody does their part, we will see success and be moving on to brighter days. I also want to read a card that we received last week. We actually did a presentation to Steve and Brenda Thompson, who own Thompson's Nursery. For years, they have supplied the flowers downtown and really have been very good to the city. And so we presented an award, and they said, Mayor, council members, and Nathan Salcina, and the card says it's very much appreciated. Thank you so much for the recognition and beautiful plaque. We appreciate the kind words and are glad to have been a part of keeping Cedar Woolley unique and welcoming community. Steve and Brenda Thompson. So if you know them, thank them for all the years that they've been so dedicated. And then one last thing that I really thought Chief Tucker might bring up, and that is we had, it's not very often that we hear back from individuals who have experienced, they're at the end of a crime. Some sort of crime has happened to them, and that we have some wonderful officers who really, you know, they're professional, they're gracious, and they really do some good work out there in the public. But we did receive a letter from a couple who live up in Bellingham, and they said, we received a call Sunday night a little after 11 p.m. informing us that our truck had been stolen in Bellingham and had been recovered at the Rite Aid in Cedar Woolley. Needless to say, we were not in the best of spirits when we had to drive down and pick it up. Upon arriving, the truck was pretty rough shape, which did not help matters. What did help was the kindness and professionalism of your officers. I cannot thank these officers enough for not only making what was a pretty bad situation tolerable, but actually pleasant. Both officers were kind, informative, and went the extra mile to make us feel comfortable. Officer Bass and also Officer Katie Wilson went out of their way to make us feel supported. And they just extend their thanks to the police department. So, anyway, it's not very often we receive letters like that. So I really want to share that with the council and also, put it on the record for the officers. Okay. That's all I have, as far as my report. So we will move on to public comment. It is 6:47. And if there's anyone here or even online who would like to make public comment, please state your name, your address, and if you can try to keep to 3 minutes, that'd be great. Thank you. Hello, Ms. Torsett.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
My name's Carol Torsett. My address is 718 Jennings Street. And I'm here.
Mayor, I think that microphone is on.
How do you turn it on? There we go. Is that
perfect.
Better?
Thank you, Carol.
Okay, my name's Carol Torsett. My address is 718 Jennings Street, Cedar Woolley. And I'm here to thank the city again for letting the Lions Club put a collection box in the entryway of the City Hall. The Cedar Woolley Lions Club are starting a program of collecting soft plastics to be recycled. We collect the plastic, we weigh it, and then we take it to Fred Meyer or to Safeway and have them add it to their recycling, which is done. It goes directly to Trex to be made into alternative wood. We report the donation directly to Trex, and then once we get 500 pounds in 6 months, they provide us with a bench made out of the Trex alternative wood, and we can place that anywhere in our community, as long as it's a public place. The Lions Club of Cedar Woolley, the Lions Club of Concrete, the Lions Club of Burlington, and of Mount Vernon are all doing this. And so we expect to collect over 2,000 pounds in our county within the next 6 months. So any donations can be dropped off at the collection box here or at one that is in the senior center or there's a phone number on them as well they can call, and we'll come and pick them up. So the plastic that is recyclable is the ones with the triangle on them that have a 2 or a 4, but also bubble wrap, air pockets, dry cleaning bags, newspaper sleeves, ice bags without the staple, plastic shipping envelopes with the address label cut off. Those are the ones medicines come in. Those are all recyclable. Bread bags, Ziplocs and other reclosable storage bags, cereal bags from inside cereal boxes, produce bags and wraps, case wrap from around bottles, toilet paper, paper towels, napkins, butter from Costco, Kleenex, milk from Costco, stretch film that comes around pallets and other items, including furniture, and wood pellet bags. Now, I have a whole list of stuff that's not acceptable. Can I read that too?
Sure.
Do I have time? The clamshell boxes that food goes in. Those are not. Food packaging that retains its shape like the cupcakes packaging and the cookie packaging. Frozen food bags are not acceptable. Candy bar wrappers, chip bags, pre-washed salad mix bags, net or mesh, degradable compostable bags, or film packaging. Pet food bags, hot dog or meat wrap packaging, six-pack rings from like beer and pop, PPE, gloves, masks, and protective wear, mulch or soil bags, pool covers, lamination film, silage and hay bags, backyard ice rinks, vinyl shower curtains or tablecloths, bedding or linen packaging, shiny, crinkly films like floral wrap or the little bags around microwavable popcorn. So we're really excited about this, and I want to thank you for letting us put a bin in the entryway of City Hall.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we want to thank the Lions Club for once again doing something extraordinary and giving back to our community. Thank you so much, and I hope you'll let your club know that on behalf of the city, we appreciate all you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Is there anyone else? I don't see any hands raised online either. So it is currently 6:52, so I will close public comment, and we will move on to new business. And the first on the list is the adjustment of the city limits to on two Pulte Road properties. And Mr. Coleman, I believe you're back on again.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Council Mayor. So this is actually very easy, but it sounds kind of complicated. In the memo, I think in this case is one where a picture says 1,000 words. There is a diagram of the two properties in question, and it shows how the city limits goes kind of right down the middle, north-south, between two addresses. So they're not... So it makes it look like there's four separate pieces of land there. And that's kind of the way the assessor's treating it right now. But it's not. It's actually just two properties. And for some reason, there was an error in the legal description of the city limits when that area was annexed way back when. It's always been understood that the city limits are actually on the east side of these two properties. It's been so understood over the years that back in 1992, the city performed a short plat on these two parcels under the understanding that the whole property was in the city limits. So those two parcels used to be one, and the city actually processed and approved a short plat to make them the way they are. So what we're asking for here is just to go through a process that would allow the property boundary to be moved over to where it shows the proposed corrected city limit line, which is a dashed line. And just correct this error. This portion of the city limits was was also incorrect on seven parcels to the south of these two. And several years ago, we went through the similar process to correct the city limits along those properties on Thresher Road. However, at the time, even though we asked the owner of these two properties if they would like to join that, they declined at that time. But now either they've changed their minds or the property owners have changed. I haven't actually looked into what the case is. The long and short of it is we're just hoping to adjust the city limits so these people no longer have two different tax parcels. It's kind of interesting. When they get their tax assessment, they get an assessment for a piece of land in the city, and they get assessment for a piece of land in the county, and they're assessed differently, and the house is on one of them, and the other one's treated like a piece of vacant land. It's very odd and not all that fun for the property owners. So this is just a simple fix. All we're asking for is the city to say, yeah, let's move ahead with this. And then staff will prepare a resolution for the city council to consider. The state process, as outlined in the memo, is the city passes a resolution approving the change, and then we pass that on to the county, and the county board will then have to pass their own resolution, and then we can clap our hands together and say we're done and move on. So all we're looking for is a motion to carry forward with this as requested in the memo.
So it is it's a motion to allow the annexation to proceed and allow staff to accept a petition for annexation per RCW 3515340. So is there any discussion on this or questions for Mr. Coleman? If not, do we have a motion to allow the annexation to proceed?
I'll make that motion.
All right, thank you.
I'll second that, Madam Mayor.
All right, so we have a motion by Councilwoman Kesty, seconded by Councilman Allen, to allow the annexation to proceed and allow staff to accept a petition for annexation per RCW 3515340. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed,
aye.
Same sign. Okay, motion carries. All right, John, we'll be looking forward to the ordinance that you'll be bringing forward to us.
All right, well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. All right. And the last item that we have on tonight is actually a first read. It is the 2022 property tax levy. And our finance director, Debbie Burton, is going to be leading us through this.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. As the mayor shared, this is the first reading of our property tax levy discussion for 2022. So I have a little presentation I'd like to share this evening. But please interrupt me with questions as you see, or you can save your questions till the end. So I'm going to try and share my screen here. Let's see if this works. All right. Are you able to see my screen?
Yes, okay. We are. Yes, we are.
Thank you. So again, this is the first reading to discuss the 2022 property tax levy. Just for some background information, and these are some terms that I'll define as I move forward with the presentation. The implicit price deflator for 2021 was 3.86%. That number is important because that informs the amount of property tax that we are able to potentially levy for 2022. We're going to go over the effect of this inflation measures on Cedar Woolley's levy history. And then we're going to talk just a little bit about highlights of expenditures and the revenues as it relates to the 2022 budget. So a definition by RCW, the implicit price deflator, also known as IPD, it's referred to as IPD quite often, is set by Washington State Department of Revenue, and it's based on purchasing numbers reported by the Bureau of Economic Analysis. So in years where it is over 1%, cities have an outright purpose or permission to levy the full 1%. But if it was less than 1%, then we would have an additional step to allow us to levy the 1%. So just since it was that above 3%, we do have the opportunity to levy the full 1% with no additional ordinances. This gives you a little history on IPD, so you can see it fluctuates quite a bit. And you can see where in 2020 it was 0.6%, so that's why we had an extra step. We needed to do two things in order to levy the 1% last year. But again, this year we're at 3.86%, so if it's council's desire after the public hearing on November 10th, they are able to levy the full 1%. This is a graph just to explain some of about how the rate of inflation compared to our property tax growth in the city of Cedar Woolley. So CPI is a term that we hear quite often, and so we use the Seattle CPIU. So as you can see, for the past 20 years, the Seattle CPIU has grown over 49%. If you look at that over the 20 years, that has grown by an average of 36.388%. Yet our city's property tax has only grown by about 8%. So what does that mean? So starting with our base year of 2002, this was the budgeted expenses in 2002. So as you can see, those 2002 dollars in today's money is worth $1.786 million, where our property tax, as you can see, only has risen 1.2, almost 1.3 million. And so we have that 41% deficit. So this is why it's really important to consider that 1% property tax raise to stay somewhat in line with inflation, but 1% just doesn't quite even keep us up with inflation by any means. As you probably are reminded, as we begin budgeting and as you've had your workshops and your goals and conversations, our expenses typically grow at a rate of 4 to 5% per year. And our revenues only grow about 1.2 to 2.5% per year. So we have to fill that gap. And so that's one other reason for taking the property tax increase each year. So why it's important, of course, cost of inflation is growing much faster than revenues overall. And then once we forego or reduce a cost of living increase, you do not regain it later, although because inflation continues to grow. So a lot of times you may have heard the comments about banking the property tax levy instead of taking the property tax levy. But it is really pointed out is that really doesn't keep up with inflation when you need that. So that just banks at today's dollars, not at the future dollars when you would actually potentially need those funds. So it's better to take that at today's dollars and then compound that moving forward. So that's the importance of taking it and not banking it. So why do we need a 1% increase? Obviously to keep pace with inflation and to maintain just the existing level of services provided by the city and to its citizens as we have approved in our 2022 budget. So it's important to know we're not advocating for adding any services at this time. So this these funds, which you approved during the budget process, is just to keep services as they exist today. So this is just a little highlight of where we are in 2021 with our general revenue fund. We only are seeing a little mild retail sales tax growth, about 2%. But we are seeing decreases in like our telephone and cable utility tax as people are going to different options for those services. So we've seen about a 4.55% decrease in those taxes. General property taxes go to support the Parks and Facilities Fund, our Cemetery Fund, and our Street Fund. And it's important to remember a 1% levy increase replaces approximately $28,558 in the 2022 budget. So this is just a quick snapshot of what property taxes pay for. A good portion, of course, pays for our wonderful public safety that we have here in our community, but also pays for our parks and our facilities, our planning emphasis, public services, and your general administration. This is just a preview of the current 2021 property tax invoice, just to show what portion of the full tax bill is related to the city. So for average assessed home, according to Skagit County, is $322,500. Their tax bill is $3,511, but the city only receives $765 of that full tax bill. So we receive 21 cents of that, of every dollar in property taxes. And this 1% is only going to apply to the city's portion. So it does not apply to the county, state, or schools portion. And this is just to give you an understanding of what the cost of 1% increase is for three different types of home values. So a $250,000 home is about $600 a year, a $300,000 home about $710 a year, and a $400,000 home is about $950 a year. And so what with a 1% increase, those city property taxes would increase by $6, a little over $7, and almost $10 a year. So my recommendation this evening is to discuss the ordinance of implementing a cost of living adjustment of 1%. And then as we move forward, we will conduct a public hearing and get citizen input on November 10th. I'm going to stop sharing my screen at this time and encourage discussion with the council.
Did I understand it right, what you said, that the income this would generate for the city is a little over $28,000?
Correct, about $28,558.
I would think if we would just quit subsidizing the cemetery, that would more than cover it.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just a question. Where you've got the money dedicated to 60% of public safety, planning is 12, parks is 9, so 60 to 74, 80. 80-some percent basically is not administrative. Why can't we raise... All these are being generated by population growth and impact. Why can't we take a different avenue to raise the funds other than raising property taxes for citizens that have lived here for a long time, many on fixed incomes? Just a question for discussion.
Are there any other thoughts or questions council would like to raise or discuss? Okay. Well, hearing none, I think Debbie, you did a fantastic job with the presentation. You certainly made it clear as to what we're looking at and what decision the council has to make regarding the property taxes. And this will come back again on the 10th. Is that what you said?
Yep, it will be a public hearing on the
10th. Okay, because today is just a first read only, so no action needs to be taken. So before I close this, I want to make sure that everybody has had a chance to make a comment or ask any questions regarding the property taxes. And you do know that you can call Debbie. She is available during business hours if you think of something that you would like to have clarification on. All right, so that is it for our new business tonight. Before we close, I just want to say that our next meeting will be a work session. It's November 3rd at 6 p.m. and it'll be here in the council chambers. And also, I want to thank Serena tonight for covering for Trina. Trina's currently out of town, and Serena graciously stepped in, and she is taking the notes and doing that hard task of writing down everything that we say that's important. So at this point, it is 7:10, and I wish you all a good night. We are adjourned.